Hey, this is Tony, and before we get started, I wanted to tell you about a free resource that's available that is really appropriate for this time of year. This is that time of year when I tend to reflect on my life. How am I doing? You know, like on a scale of 1 to 10, how's my life going? And then not just reflect about what's happened in the last year, but then to project into the next year and to say, how do I want my life to be different moving forward? And so there's a free tool. It's available on our website. I just wanted to tell you about it. It's called Life Score. It's a Life Score assessment. And so to find it, all you have to do is go to tonyloyd.com/LifeScore, LifeScore. So that's TonyLoyd with one L, tonyloyd.com/LifeScore. So let's get to the interview.
And so one day I got a phone call from, you know, Sir Abed's office, and his secretary said, the chairperson of BRAC would like to meet you and talk to you about what you're doing. Can you take a meeting from him this week? And I said, of course.
Welcome to Social Entrepreneur. My name is Tony Loyd. I'm a former Fortune 500 executive, but today I spend my time with changemakers who are making an impact in the world. Each week, you'll hear exciting stories of ordinary people just like you who are making a difference. They share their successes, their failures, and what they're learning along the way. Thanks for being with me today. Let's get started. Hi, and welcome back to Social Entrepreneur. And today, we're talking to Maymuna Ahmed of Teach for Bangladesh. Now, you may have heard of Teach for America, Wendy Kopp's organization. And in Teach for America, they identify high potential individuals, people with degrees from some of the finest universities on earth, and they enroll these people to volunteer in high need school districts. So some of the poorest school districts in the United States with the highest need. Well, that model is being replicated around the world through an organization called Teach for All, and Maymuna Ahmed is replicating that model in Bangladesh through Teach for Bangladesh. I'm going to let Maymuna tell you this story. Here she is, Maymuna Ahmed of Teach for Bangladesh.
In Bangladesh, as is the case in most countries, sadly, around the world, there exists a massive disparity in the quality of education and life opportunities that children receive based on the socioeconomic background of their parents and their families. So Bangladesh is one of the poorest countries in the world. The majority of the children that we serve live on less than $2 a day. Parents are bus drivers. They work in garments factories. For those of your listeners who are familiar with Bangladesh, we're also known for being a large exporter of garments around the world. So a lot of our parents work in those factories. A lot of them pull rickshaws. And so children go to school for a very short number of hours in a day, usually 2 to 3 if they're in primary school. They're often in very, very overcrowded classrooms. It's not unusual to have 150 kids in a classroom for a teacher. Schools have very poor infrastructure. But one of the most pressing problems is that teachers in our schools come with a very low level of education themselves often. Usually they have barely passed high school or have had a couple of years of college, very poor training and support. And so the education that they're able to deliver, despite their best efforts and their best intentions, often doesn't really serve the children that they're trying to help. And this is, of course, in stark contrast to some of the highest income schools that are offering a world-class education here in Bangladesh. And so we work to bridge this divide. And the way we do that, we believe that the problem is a systemic problem. It's not just a problem in schools. It's not just a problem with curriculum or textbooks. It's a multifaceted, multidimensional problem. And to really bring about a long-term sustainable change, we actually need to change the way in which leadership in this country works. So we run a leadership development fellowship that recruits young graduates and young professionals who are kind of at the start of their professional journeys. And we give them intensive training and support and embed them in these low-income schools where they work for 2 years as full-time teachers, during which they're working to change the life trajectory of the children that are in their classrooms, but they're also working to build their own knowledge, skills, and mindsets so that they're able to work as lifelong advocates for equity in various sectors across Bangladesh.
In one of your earlier recruiting videos I saw, you said something like there's 17 million primary school children in Bangladesh, 8 million will drop out before class 5, and 15 million will drop out before class 12. So of the 17 million who start, only 2 million of those are going to make it to complete class 12. Is that still true?
Mm-hmm. Bangladesh has made massive strides in the last decade or two in terms of enrolling students into school. So we have more than 99% of students actually stepping foot in school, which is a great win. However, it doesn't reveal the fact that so many children are actually not completing their education. And those who are staying in school, even a few years, the quality of the education that they're getting is really subpar.
So I'd like to get to your journey. I'd like to talk about how you ended up founding and running Teach for Bangladesh. So give me your story. Where does your story begin?
So I am Bangladeshi American. I was born in Washington, D.C. and grew up back and forth between the suburbs of Washington and Dhaka, where my parents are originally from. I lived in Bangladesh between the ages of 7 and 13 and was privileged to be born to a family that was able to send me to really great schools in Bangladesh. So I went to a private school when I lived in this country. It was an English medium school. I grew up, English was a first language for me, which makes a huge difference in Bangladesh. I read a lot of books. I got to travel. And one of the things I really remember is that my parents and the other adults around me telling me that I could do anything if I wanted to, right? Like really asking this question of, what do you want to be when you grow up? But like asking it in an expansive way, right? Like there were so many opportunities that were open. And I remember at a very, very young age realizing that those opportunities that were kind of almost taken for granted for me were very much not there for tons and tons of children all around me. A city like Dhaka, Dhaka is one of the most densely populated cities in the world. Poverty is everywhere you look. You're kind of inundated by it. So every day on my way to school, I was passing children on the streets who were begging, who were selling trinkets. And so I think I grew up with a really acute understanding that I had been born lucky, and that there was something in me that felt a real need to pay it forward. And so fast forward, my parents moved us back to the United States when I was a teenager. I went to college in Western Massachusetts at Mount Holyoke College. I was studying international relations, political science. And, you know, I had aspirations of going to law school, you know, maybe joining the Foreign Service. I was really interested in, you know, conflict, particularly global conflict and conflict resolution. When Teach for America approached me when I was a senior in college, and, you know, I had never considered going into teaching or going into education, but I remember meeting with a recruiter from Teach for America, and this guy who was not that much older than myself kind of sitting across from me and talking really vividly about his classroom, his kids, and this huge injustice that he saw in our classrooms in the United States. And I think it was that theme of injustice that really spoke to me, given the things that I had seen growing up. And, you know, moving back to America, I think what's beautiful about America is the promise of the American dream, right? And the promise of equality if you just work hard enough and if you try hard enough. And what I realized was actually, you know, I had made it in America, again, because I had been fortunate. But that actually we were reneging on that promise to millions and millions of children in this country. So I think that like that opportunity to really put my money where my mouth was, right? And like get involved and not just intellectualize about social justice, but actually get in the trenches was really exciting to me. I applied to Teach for America. I got in somehow, and I was placed to be a high school mathematics teacher in Washington, D.C., the city of my birth. and the city that I had not lived in, you know, decades. And my mom always laughs that it's a little bit of karma because I, you know, had strayed a little bit away from math when I was in high school. And then Teach for America asked me to teach mathematics. And it was actually a cathartic experience in some ways because I had to face the psychological trauma that I had with poor math teachers growing up. And I think it really, you know, made me develop a deep appreciation for mathematics. So I became a teacher. I taught 13, 14, and 15-year-olds algebra in DC. And those 2 years that I spent in the classroom were some of the toughest, most heartbreaking, but also just most meaningful and fulfilling years that I could have asked for, that I could have imagined. And as I got to know my kids and as I got really into the work and started deconstructing what my role was in this work, I kept thinking about my upbringing in Bangladesh. And I kept thinking about the fact that this disparity that I was witnessing in DC existed, you know, in my parents' hometown of Dhaka, and that, you know, children were children no matter where in the world you're at. And so I started playing with the idea of Teach for Bangladesh even then at a very, very early stage in my teaching career. But, you know, I had not lived in Bangladesh for a long time. I didn't know if this was the right model to work with in Bangladesh. I didn't know if I would, you know, like living in Bangladesh or working there. And so when I finished teaching, I decided to take some time off and go live and just explore Bangladesh kind of with an open mind. So I moved back in 2011 with the initial kind of intention of being in Dhaka for 5-6 months and reconnecting with my roots. And I began working at a legal aid organization in Bangladesh that worked with marginalized communities and different kinds of, you know, human rights issues. And while I was working at that organization, somehow I kept finding excuses to get back into schools and into classrooms. And so somehow I would just end up in schools and I would ask the teachers if I could just sit in and observe what they were doing and, you know, hang out with kids. And, you know, I began to realize that, you know, there was this incredible need and that there was something that really spoke to me about addressing this issue. And then kind of began a long soul searching period where, you know, I was really confronted with what I felt was hubris on my point, right? Like I was a 20-something-year-old, you know, American in some ways who had moved to Bangladesh after not living there for a long while. Who was I to really start an organization? I had never fundraised before. I had never managed a team before. And, you know, so I really was in this, I don't know, period of questioning and self-reflection about whether or not this is the right thing for me and what role I could play. And I started asking a lot of other entrepreneurs about their experience and mentors and friends, what they thought. And there's one piece of advice that I got from an uncle that really stuck with me. And he said to me, you could always get more experience. You could always go and get more schooling, more training, but you're never going to be the perfect leader or the perfect person in any given moment. And instead, a different way to think about it is that you're the person who is choosing to show up. And if you're choosing to be here and you're choosing to take this on, that's what makes you the right person. And so that kind of just gave me the encouragement and kind of push I needed, I guess. And so, you know, I decided to move here permanently. You know, began working out of cafes where I could get free Wi-Fi.
What year is this then? This is around 2011, going into 2012?
Yeah. So at the end of 2011, I took a trip to visit Teach for India. So at that point, I got to know that there were other entrepreneurs who had similarly been inspired by Teach for America. And I think at that point, there were about 15 or 16 countries around the world that had adapted the model. Of course, now there are 46. So it's grown tremendously in just the time that I've been involved. And so I visited Teach for India in December of 2011, slept on people's couches and visited their classrooms in Bombay, in Delhi, and in Pune. And I remember standing in the home of this child in a slum in Bombay and realizing that, you know, if it's happening in India, it just has to happen in Bangladesh. And if it's going to happen in Bangladesh, I will regret it my entire life if I'm not a part of making it happen. And so something just clicked. And in January 2012, you know, I went back home to DC. I got some of my stuff. I moved back. I kind of set up shop. And I started just writing the initial strategic plan and looking for funding. And that was kind of the start of it all. And that was about 6 years ago.
You know, you had never fundraised before. You had never started a startup, if you will. In a way, this is a startup.
Absolutely.
So how did you figure out that part? So how did you figure out kind of the customer needs analysis that, you know, Sure. Or did you just say, here's what I've seen that works. Let's see if we can lift and shift and apply this over here? Or did you try to make the Teach for America model, which is now Teach for All, right? Did you try to make that very specific to your context? And then how did you raise the funds? How did you go from there?
Yeah, that was really, really important to me. Before I decided to do this, I wanted to get really clear that I was not going to be transplanting a model wholesale from the United States to Bangladesh. That felt like it wouldn't work, it wouldn't be authentic, it wouldn't, you know, be sustainable. And I thought it was really important that I was adapting this model in a way that felt really authentic to me as a leader, and not taking it on just because it was there as a blueprint almost, right? And so the first few months of work was really just about immersing myself in the context and getting to really understand what the problem was in Bangladesh. And so that happened through a combination of a ton of reading, a lot of talking to education experts here in Bangladesh, spending a lot of time in schools and classrooms with kids and teachers and parents. You know, one of the wonderful things about Bangladesh is that it's a country that is rich with NGOs and social innovation, right? For decades, Bangladesh has been kind of a hotbed of social entrepreneurship. And so it was fascinating to talk to other entrepreneurs and their different takes on not just education problems, but related problems. And, you know, it was a lot of writing and just kind of fleshing out of ideas. At that point, Teach for All was in its early stages as well. And so it was helpful to have colleagues from the global network to also be able to bounce ideas off of and to give some structure to my thinking in those early days as well.
So how did you start fundraising? I mean, like, how did you figure out who has funds and how to go get them?
So it was a lot of cold calling initially. And, you know, the first big grant we got actually the first grant we got was my own infusion of cash from my savings as a public school teacher in DC. And then the first real outside grant that we got came through some beautiful serendipity. You know, I was doing this, you know, kind of context and research analysis of what the situation was in Bangladesh. And through that, I was going to a lot of universities and talking to graduates and students and seeing if there was an appetite for participating in a program like the one I was proposing. And one of the universities I spent a lot of time at was BRAC University. And BRAC, you may know, is one of the largest NGOs in the world, and it happens to be based out of Bangladesh. And the story of BRAC, of course, is tremendous and inspiring all on its own. You should do a full podcast on BRAC one day. But BRAC is an NGO in Bangladesh, and it's also probably one of the world's first social businesses, right? So it had a nonprofit side, and it also has many business ventures that it uses to funnel cash back into its nonprofit work. And so BRAC University was one of its profit-making ventures. And, you know, because I was hanging out at BRAC, I guess somehow the founder and chairperson of BRAC, Sir Fazlul Hassan Abed, got to know about my work and the fact that I was kind of tinkering around with this problem. And so one day I got a phone call from, you know, Sir Abed's office, and his secretary said, the chairperson of BRAC would like to meet you and talk to you about what you're doing. Can you take a meeting from him this week? And I said, of course. So,
that's not just yes, that's oh yes.
Yeah, exactly. And I was, I remember going to see him, and I was so starstruck and nervous. And he was just so gracious and kind. And he, you know, we spoke for 15, 20 minutes. He asked me what I was doing, why I wanted to do it. And I knew at that point that he had already known about the Teach for America model and Teach for All and had known Wendy Kopp for a while. In fact, funny aside, Sir Abed actually is the one who named Teach for All. And so when Wendy was thinking about what to name this global network, you know, they were playing around with different names. Apparently, Sir Abed was the one who suggested Teach for All. So anyway, he had a love and appreciation for the model already. And it turns out that he was looking for someone to support to do this in Bangladesh. And so, you know, after talking to me for a little while, he just said, okay, so what do you need to get this started? And I said, well, you know, some money would be nice. And he said, you know, it's not something that BRAC typically does in terms of funding other social initiatives, but they sort of made an exception for us and they became our first funder in mid-2012. And as soon as that funding came in, the first thing I did was I called up my roommate from Teach for America who coincidentally was a Bangladeshi American herself who had just moved to Bangladesh to teach. And we had been roommates, again, through serendipity. Because we're Bangladeshi Americans, we both have same last name. And we were placed alphabetically to room together during training at Teach for America. And so Nashra had moved to Bangladesh at that point, and she became our first employee with the money that we got from BRAC and Sir Abed.
Well, let's shift gears here a little bit. So something you've learned on your journey, so a key piece of advice that you've learned that you would pass on to others.
I've been thinking about this a lot recently, and I think that the hard work and perseverance and kind of toil that comes with being a social entrepreneur gets a lot of glory and hype, I think, in social media, in the entrepreneurial circle. It sometimes feels like we're all competing to see who's the most overworked among us. And I think it's really, really unhealthy and unsustainable. And so I think the biggest advice I would give myself, if I could go back, would be to take care of yourself. I think it's so important to surround yourself with family and friends who are going to understand how tough the journey is. It's so important to get exercise and sleep and to eat. And I think that if, you know, sometimes we forget that in this work, in an entrepreneurial pursuit, you are your biggest asset. And so if you don't take care of that asset, you're actually shortchanging yourself and those you're trying to serve and not bringing the best of yourself to the work.
How can people find Teach for Bangladesh online or on social media?
Yeah, so we're teachforbangladesh.org is our website. We have a brand new website, so I hope folks check it out. And we're also on Facebook, we're on Instagram, we're on Twitter. Twitter and Instagram are, we're picking up our work on Twitter and Instagram, but we're very active on Facebook. And yeah, I think the website is just Facebook/teach4bd.
All right. We'll put links to all that in the show notes then. So a call to action. People have been hanging out with you and me for a while now. What's something you'd like to see them go and do as a result of this conversation?
I hope that listeners are inspired to support the work that we're doing here in Bangladesh. And supporting our work is very simple. We have a very secure donation portal on our website, again, teachforbangladesh.org. And you can go to teachforbangladesh.org/donate. We are also registered as a 501c3 in the United States, which means any donations to us would be tax deductible in the United States. And any amount, whether it's $5 or $5,000, would make such a big difference to the work that we do and the children that we serve here in Bangladesh.
Excellent. Well, Maimuna, thank you so much for being with us on Social Entrepreneur.
I appreciate it very much. Thank you.
And thanks to you, the listener, for joining us today. You are the reason that we produce Social Entrepreneur every Monday. You can find the show notes, bonus material, and more at tonyloyd.com. That's TonyLoyd.com. And while you're at it, will you do me a favor? Subscribe, rate, and review this podcast on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app. It really helps others to find these stories of changemakers who are making a difference in the world. Well, listen, thanks so much for joining me today. And until next time, please remember to use this one short amazing life and go make an impact. Thanks. We'll talk to you next time on Social Entrepreneur.